So this is a brief outline of my talk. First, we're going to have a look at TLS and how it uses RC4 encryption. Then we're going to analyze RC4, and then we're going to have a look at two attacks on RC4 and TLS based on this analysis. So TLS stands for Transport Layer Security. And the purpose of this protocol is to establish a confidential and authenticated channel between a client and a server. And TLS is probably one of the most widely used cryptographic protocols. We use it to secure websites, access to email servers and mobile applications. And it seems like almost all devices which are connecting to the internet will support TLS. TLS was originally developed at Netscape under the name Secure Socket Layer, or SSL. But in 1999, it was standardized by the IETF as TLS, and we have had different versions of TLS, and the most current one is 1.2, which is from 2008. So we can essentially view TLS as consisting of two stages. There's the first stage where the client and the server will interact in the handshake protocol, and then there's a second stage where they run a record protocol. So the purpose of the handshake protocol is to negotiate what cipher suite to use, and to authenticate, and to establish the keys which we're going to use in the record protocol. And then the record protocol is going to protect the application layer data, which is going to be sent from the client to the server and back. So what I'm going to focus on in this talk is the record protocol. So the record protocol uses the MAC encode encrypt approach to protect the data. That means that it's going to first MAC the payload together with a sequence number and a header. And then it's going to encrypt this MAC tag together with the payload. And if the encryption algorithm requires any padding, this is also where we're going to add this. So there's different options for the MAC algorithm and the encryption algorithm. For the MAC, we can use HMAC in combination with MD5 or SHA. And for the encryption algorithm, we can use AES in CPC mode or perhaps triple DES in CPC mode. Or we can use RC4. And if we use RC4, this picture becomes slightly simpler, since we don't need any padding. And the encryption is just an XOR with the RC4 keystream. So even generating the RC4 keystream is relatively simple. RC4 uses a key scheduling algorithm, which sets up this byte permutation S. And it does this with a key which can, in principle, be anything from 1 to 256 bytes. But in TLS, we're going to use 16-byte keys. And then by executing the keystream generation algorithm multiple times, we can generate a keystream. So for completeness, I should mention that TLS 1.2 actually supports an alternative to the MAC encode encrypt approach, and that is to use authenticated encryption. However, TLS 1.2 is not widely supported. These are the latest numbers from SSL Pulse, which monitors web servers. And as you can see, the support for TLS 1.2 is slightly less than 20%. Also, all the major browsers will not support TLS 1.2, at least not out of the box. So in practice, the traffic which we are going to see on the internet is going to be protected by the MAC encode encrypt approach. So recently, there's been some attacks against the CPC-based encryption options in TLS. You might have heard of the Beast attack or Lucky 13. And while we do have countermeasures against these attacks, it has been recommended that we could just simply switch to RC4. Then we don't have to worry about padding oracles or predictable IVs. And this has actually been recommended by the security company F5 and also by Qualys. And in practice, there are a lot of TLS connections which are protected with RC4. In a recent survey done by the ICSI, it was found that more than 50% of the surveyed 60 billion TLS connections were actually protected using RC4. However, there's a small problem here, and that is that it's well known that RC4 has some statistical weaknesses. So the real question here is, what kind of security do we get if we use RC4 in our TLS connections? So there's a whole line of papers which are looking at individual biases in the RC4 keystream. And they try to explain these biases in terms of statistical properties of the RC4 algorithm. So to construct an attack, we take a slightly different approach. We simply use brute force to compute an accurate description of the keystream byte distribution. More specifically, we use 2 to the 44 random independent RC4 keys to generate the distribution for the first 256 bytes. And somewhat surprisingly, this revealed a lot of new biases in the RC4 keystream. And let me just show you some of these distributions. This is the distribution for the first keystream byte. Here on the x-axis, we have all the different byte values. And on the y-axis, we have the probability that this byte value will appear. And as you can see, it has this kind of funny shape. And all these small spikes here, they're actually not noise. They are real biases in this keystream byte. And the most significant bias, this bias away from 129, is actually a new bias, and it seems to be an artifact of using 16-byte keys. So when we switch to the second byte, it looks completely different. There's a huge bias towards zero. This was identified by Manton and Shamir. But there's also a lot of other biases here, which I don't believe have been explained in the literature. Again, going to the next keystream byte, it's completely different. But from keystream byte 4, we start to see a kind of a more regular pattern. And you can see this when I start to flip through the bytes. This is the fifth byte, and the sixth, and so forth. You can see here. So there's two kind of significant biases, which we can see. One towards zero, which was also identified by Mitra et al. But you also have this new bias, which moves. And this is going to be a bias towards I for position I. So when we reach the 16th keystream byte, we have this very large bias appearing. And this is a key length dependent bias. So it appears here because we use 16 byte length keys. And what we discovered when we have a look at these distributions is that this bias will actually reappear at any position, which is a multiple of 16. And it's going to be shifted further and further to the left here. So there's a lot of new biases to have a look at. So we can use these distributions to construct a plaintext recovery attack. We're taking into account all of these biases. But to do this, it would require that we can have many encryptions of the same message using different RC4 keys. So the question here is this actually applicable to TLS? And well, you could imagine that you have an adversary which would like to target secure HTTP cookies. So we could imagine that we have a client which received a secure cookie from a secure website protected with TLS. Now, if we can trick this client into visit a malicious site, we can serve him a JavaScript. And this JavaScript could then make requests to the secure site. And what is going to happen is that the client's browser will automatically attach the cookie to these requests, and the requests are going to be protected by TLS. So if we do this repeatedly, we can get many encryptions of the same cookie. And to construct such a JavaScript is actually fairly straightforward. We used XML HTTP requests and POST requests, which seem to give the best performance. And we don't actually have to break any same origin policies to do this. The only thing you have to be careful about is not to overload the browser. In that case, we'll just lie down and die and not send any more requests. So doing this, we can imagine an attacker would have a lot of encryptions of this cookie. And if you now consider a certain byte position R, We could, for a plain text candidate byte, PR, just compute the XOR between the plain text candidate and the ciphertext bytes. And if we do this, we will get an induced distribution on the keystream byte at position R. This we can then compare to our computer distribution. More specifically, we can use this distribution to compute the probability that we would observe this induced distribution. And thereby, we will get a likelihood for the correctness of the plain text byte PR. So here, a recovery algorithm is really simple. We simply compute the most likely plain text byte. And we can do this for all the bytes. So how successful is this? Well, this graph shows the recovery rate for 2 to the 20 sessions. And here on the x-axis, we have the different byte positions. So we have up to 256. And you can see there's a huge spike here at the second byte. And this is due to this huge bias towards 0. These smaller spikes we have here are due to these key length dependent biases. So when we increase the number of sessions, our recovery rate is, of course, going to increase. I mean, if we keep doing this, it's going to get better and better and better and better. And when we reach 2 to the 28 sessions, we can see that we recover almost half of all the bytes with a recovery rate which is more than 80%. If we go further, all the way to 2 to the 32, we're going to recover essentially all the bytes. So, 2 to the 32 sessions are, of course, a lot of sessions. So one of the limitations of this attack is that it requires a lot of traffic. But there are other limitations. For example, the attacker will have to force renegotiation or session resumption to ensure that this cookie, which we're trying to recover, is actually encrypted under different RC4 keys. Yeah? And this we don't know how to do from a JavaScript, so this has to be an active attack. Another limitation is that we can only recover the first 220 plain text bytes because the first 36 keystream bytes will be used to encrypt the last message of the handshake protocol. This is just the way the protocol works. If we know something about the cookie or the plain text which we are trying to recover, we can, of course, increase the success probability of the attack. For example, if you know that it's a base64 encoded message, that will increase the success probability, or we might have a language model for the cookie. But this is not going to address the last two limitations of the attack. To do this, we have to consider double byte biases in the RC4 keystream. And Flew and McGrew, they identified biases for consecutive keystream bytes, and these biases are persistent throughout the keystream, meaning that they repeat with a period of 256 bytes. So we can use these biases to construct an attack which can target any plain text byte position, not just the initial 220 bytes, but anywhere in the plain text that you might want. Furthermore, this attack will not require the attacker to force this session resumption or session renegotiation. So we can actually do it with essentially one TLS connection, if you like. So how are we going to do this? It's also relatively simple. We consider the RC4 keystream with these repeating bytes, and then we're going to encrypt multiple copies of the plain text. And we are going to align them such that the same plain text bytes repeat with the same period as the repeating biases. Yeah? And we can do this by kind of adjusting this JavaScript, adding a little bit of padding here and there to our requests. So this is not hard to achieve. When we then consider the ciphertext, we could essentially do the same type of attack as we did previously and try to compute the most likely byte pair. But we can also do something slightly more clever. Because we can, for a given plain text, we can consider overlapping pairs of bytes and thereby build like a small chain. And if we combine the probability estimates, we can get a more accurate likelihood estimate for the kind of the entire message instead of just considering individual byte pairs. The problem with this is that it's no longer trivial to compute the most likely plain text, so we construct an optimal Viterbi-style algorithm to do this for us. The details of this are, of course, in the paper, if you're interested in exactly how we do this. So how successful is this attack? Well, this graph shows the recovery rate. And here on the x-axis, we have the number of encrypted plaintext copies times 2 to the 30. And the blue line here indicates the recovery of a full 16-byte cookie, meaning correctly recovering all the bytes, whereas the red line is the kind of the average recovery rate of the individual bytes. So, yeah, as you can see, once we get into to this area, 10, 11, 12 times 2 to the 30 copies of the plain text, we have a really good recovery rate. So, well, this attack will still require a lot of traffic, and it actually requires more traffic than the previous attack. But it doesn't have the other limitations of having to force this session renegotiation or resumption. And we can target, as I said, any plaintext byte. So in practice, this might actually be the better attack to try to mount. Again, we can construct an attack with a higher success rate if we know something about the underlying plaintext, like the encoding or a language model. So what are the countermeasures against this attack? Well, you could discard the initial keystream bytes, which has been recommended by many. Or you could try to fragment records from the application layer. And this will have the effect that only very few bytes of the application layer data will be encrypted with the initial keystream bytes, because most of the space will be taken up by max of the messages. These countermeasures will, of course, only be effective against the first attack, and will not address the second attack at all. You could also consider adding random length padding to your records to kind of try to displace the messages in the keystream. Or in case you're worried about your cookies, you could try to limit the lifetime of your cookie or the number of times you can send a cookie. But these measures are not that effective. Of course, the most efficient countermeasure would be to stop using RC4 and TLS. So what are the vendors doing? It seems like Opera is actually implementing a combination of the first countermeasures, whereas Google seems more focused on implementing TLS 1.2 and move to AES DCM as fast as possible. Microsoft seems to have decided to disable RC4 by default in TLS in Windows Preview 8.1. So what are the conclusions here? Well, we do have these two attacks. I would say that the attacks are feasible but not truly practical, and this is simply due to the amount of traffic required to mount the attacks. But it clearly illustrates that the level of security provided by RC4 and TLS is far below than what you would expect from the key sizes which you're using. And furthermore, it would seem very optimistic to believe that you cannot improve the attacks sometime in the future, that somebody will not come up with some tweaks that will make them better. So our recommendation would definitely be to try to phase out RC4 and TLS as soon as possible. So if you are interested in more details, you can get the full version of the paper from our homepage, but you can also get all the graphs for the entire keystream distribution if you're interested, and you can also get all the raw data if you want to play around with the numbers yourself. Furthermore, you could also, if you're interested in more discussion on this, you could go to Crypto next week, where Adam Langley from Google is going to give an invited talk with the title, Why the Web Still Runs on RC4. I'm sure he will have a lot of insights to share on that. And I'm pretty sure there will also be a YouTube video of this talk. As future work, well, there are a lot of protocols which are still using RC4. And well, it might be possible to mount similar types of attacks against these. One example is, of course, WPA. And since I have a little bit of extra time, let me just show you this slide. This shows the keystream distribution of the first byte. The red line here is the distribution I showed you just a little while ago. This assumes that you use uniform keys. So the blue line here is the distribution you get if you set up the keys as you will set up the keys in WPA. So WPA are not using uniform RC4 keys. They have a special structure. And when you use keys with this structure, you're going to end up with this funny distribution. So if you want to know how that affects the type of attacks we're doing, how well we can recover the bytes with WPA keys, you can have a look at the full version of the paper, and we'll have all the details there. And that was actually all I had to say. Thank you.
Soon we have questions, so please come up.
No, is the third speaker here? Ah, to you, I'm sorry.
Hi, my name is Tawan, I'm from Carleton, from Canada. Yep. So my question is the problem you described, is that problem with RC4 or problem with the TLS use of RC4, is that, or the implementation of TLS?
Well, it is essentially a problem with RC4. Okay. Due to these biases. Of course, there's a lot of things which could be improved in TLS as well.
Okay.
But the attacks which we demonstrate here are based on the biases in RC4.
Okay.
So I guess that okay. answers your question, yeah?
So next question is, you know, if you run a website to collect a credit card number, mm-hmm. you have to follow the PCI DSS, right? And called yeah. Payment Card Industry Data Security Standard. And actually, they require you to use RC4 now because the BIST attack. So I'm just yeah. wondering which one is more serious, like the BIST or your attack?
Well, it depends. If you're really forced to run TLS 1.0 and you do not have any patches against BIST, I would say that running RC4 would be the better option because the BIST has an attack complexity which is lower than this attack.
Okay.
But the BIST would also require you to break the same origin policy. So if you believe that your browser is really secure, maybe you could, the BIST attack will not apply.
Okay, thank you.
Actually, I'm going to disagree with part of your answer to him.
Okay.
It isn't a problem with RC4. It's a problem with the way they did this key scheduling and the initialization vector in TLS as applied to RC4. So what you have to do is realize that many of these attacks we've known about since we discussed TLS1, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And many of us advocated in the TLS working group mm-hmm. that we make changes mm-hmm. and instead the industry said, no, we have to be as strictly compatible with SSL and the flaws that were in it as possible, and therefore these things were carried forward into TLS. Mm-hmm. But RC, so...
Are you suggesting that there would be a secure way to use RC4 in TLS?
There are we've known many ways to improve upon the way that that RC4 is implemented in TLS for a long time,
okay.
but it's often better, you know, often easier to say, oh, look, here's a shiny new thing that we should go towards instead than to fix the bugs in the old thing. On the OpenSSH side, they went with one of the many proposed solutions and said, no, we'll fix the algorithms in the way that they're used. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are much more secure ways to use everything in TLS. The whole thing is a mess. But RC4 certainly could be used much more securely. For, you know, one of the problems that you have here is just the repetition technique that they used with 128-bit keys, and everyone said, yeah, okay, but there's a mixing problem here. It's pretty obvious in here, so just do it three times. Or use the 256-bit key. Or I proposed at the time saying, keys are cheap. Use an 8,000-bit key, and we get rid of all the repetition patterns. And they say, well, but the key should reflect the strength of the algorithm. You say, just think of it as a short key with a long piece of padding. Okay, but anyway, none of these proposals went because of the emphasis in the working group towards strict reverse compatibility with what had already been in SSL. Okay. And these kinds of things are not, you know, these are human problems. But anyway, so I just wanted to disagree with your answer to him. This is a problem with RC4 as implemented in our in TLS.
Just okay. In the interest of time, I want to see if you have anything to say to that.
Yes, I don't see how you can end up with a really secure implementation, how you can get rid of these long-term biases in the RC4 keystream, and I don't see how you could actually...
I'll be happy to tell you offline.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I think there's a question, another question.
Sorry, there is a question, yes.
The previous questioner said there was an issue about the way that IVs are combined with the key in TLS. This is absolutely incorrect. I see he's not listening to me. He's totally wrong. There is no IV in the way that RC4 is used. I think he may be getting confused with the way that RC4 is used in WEP and WPA. And in fact, there is no way to rescue TLS's use of RC4 in any of the ways that he suggests.
I look forward to the lunch discussions about this. Okay, so we have another speaker. I'm sorry, but we're actually running on schedule, so this was a good discussion. Thank you again. Sorry about that. Yes, that was an excellent talk.